The fifth barrier to asking for what you want is pride, and it's afraid that we're going to appear helpless, weak, needy. And my friend Marty Jeffers says there's a threefold model of most people's evolution. We start in need. I need this. I need that. And then you go into greed, and you start getting it, and you become a little avaricious. And the richest man in Australia, Peter J. Daniels, once told me, you cannot be greedy if you're tithing 10% and if you've still got a compoundingly giving away. But the third thing that Marty Jeffries taught me is that what happens is when you get your consciousness right, when you really know how to ask for yourself, when you really know how to balance your life, then you get into being freed. And the whole goal here is to go from being needy, greedy, to being freed. And once you're freed, then you can go out and free other people. We know that rule. And I want to tell a story about a guy who is 83 years old right now. He's written a book and he writes a newspaper column read by 20 million people a day called Thanks a Million. But I want to go way back in this guy's history. His name is Ross Percy. He's a Jewish gentleman. When he was 5 years old, all he wanted to do with his whole life is just buy a bicycle. And he went to a country club that was a goy country club and said, I'd like to work. And they said, are you a Jewish kid? He said, get out of here. We don't let Jews work here. And he said it was so painful to him to hear that because until then he didn't know that Judaism could be something that might work against him. And his dad used to shod horses for a living, so his dad didn't quite have the communication skills to take him through it. But Ross said that day, I'm going to stand on my own. I'm going to learn how to shine shoes. I'm going to make money, and I'm going to become rich. And now he is mega rich and gives away fortunes. But I want to share his best story because he said, how is it that I can make a difference to a lot of poor kids all at once? And he's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's a wonderful man with a sweetheart, and he knows that life gives to the giver and takes from the taker. But at Christmas, a couple of years ago, what he did was he called out 1,000 kids that were indigent, poor, and on the other side of scratch. And he brought them all together. He fed them breakfast. And then he told his little story of how he'd been maligned, mistreated, stepped on, put down, and squished, and they'd tried to stomp on his pride. And he said, don't ever let anyone step on your pride in the future. And he says, I have a gift for every one of you, a gift I had to earn for myself and one that my dad desperately wanted to give me, but we just didn't have the financial access to do it. And he parts the curtain, and there's 1,500 bicycles on the other side. And he said, kids, go on the other side and pick the bicycle of your heart's desire. And if you got a little brother or sister at home and there's enough, take one for them. I mean, this guy is one of the colossal givers. It's touching what you can do once you get a rightful pride, a strong pride, a healthy pride, and you positively and correctly love yourself. But it comes out of asking yourself lots of positively interrogating questions that will enhance and embolden who you can be.
I can give an example of where pride in my own life stopped me and how I really began to see it. When I went to a 10-day meditation retreat up in Barre, Massachusetts once, we weren't allowed to talk. We weren't allowed to read anything for 10 days. We weren't allowed to interact with anybody, no eye contact, etc. And after about 5 days, I was starting to lose it. I was starting to question everything I'd ever believed in. And it was very difficult to go through that as an intellectual meltdown was occurring inside of me. And I went to see the teacher of the course. They have an interview halfway through, and I think it's to make sure you're not flipping out, which I felt I was. So I go in to see the teacher, and he says, are you okay? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think everything I ever believed in is, like, dissolving. He said, oh, that's good. I thought he was going to say, eat more meat, you know, leave the seminar, you know, do something. And he didn't. So I walk out of there, and I am, like, starting to cry. And I realize I'm just so scared. And I go outside, and it's this big Georgian mansion. I start hugging this big pillar, and I'm holding on to it like I'm trying to hold on to some kind of reality. And I started to realize my whole life it wasn't okay not to know. I had to know everything perfectly. Like my dad would say, where's the hammer that I had had an hour earlier? I didn't know, and I should know because I'd taken it. Then I would be teaching school, and someone would say, you know, Mr. Canfield, what's the five causes of this, or what about this? And I would say, I couldn't say I don't know because it wasn't okay to admit it. And so I'd say, well, I think that's a really good question. Why don't you read chapter 5 and report back to us tomorrow? It was a nice little teacher trick. But the truth was, I started to realize all these things I didn't know, and I started to get in touch with it. It was never okay for me to ask. And I was sitting there, I was probably about 38 years old, and I'm just hugging this thing, crying away. And I started to realize all of my defenses were dissolving, all of my fears were letting go. So I could start to ask for what I wanted, because I had that male macho thing that we all have. Men don't ask. We're supposed to know. We saw a cartoon recently. It showed this guy and his wife asking him the question, why don't you stop and ask for directions? And he says, because my genetic program prevents me from stopping to ask directions. That's why. It's like we men, we have to look like we have it all together. We have to look like we're totally self-sufficient. I remember in 1972, I was involved in the Democratic Party at that time. And there was a guy from Missouri, Senator Eagleton, and he was the Democratic vice presidential potential nominee. And they actually wouldn't elect him to be the nominee for the party because he had once gone to see a psychologist. And that meant that if he went to ask for some psychological help, that it would probably indicate that he was emotionally unstable and therefore wouldn't be able to run the country. And to this day, we can't get medical aid, you know, in terms of insurance for psychological problems. We can get them for physical problems. And as you and I both know, most of our physical problems are psychologically based.
90%. It used to be called psychosomatic. Now it's called psychoneuroimmunology.
And so the reality is there's a whole deal of programming for men that it's not okay. So our pride as men is at stake. It stops us from asking.
One of the other levels of pride comes from our friend Jane Bluestein, who is not only an extraordinary speaker but a terrific writer. She says, I remember the first time I asked for $500 as my speaking fee. I literally had to take a drink of water because I couldn't get the words out of my mouth. The woman who hired me said, yeah, that's fine. I just stared at her and she said, you didn't think we were going to say okay, did you? I was thinking, am I that transparent? She said, you're worth $500. And Jack, talk about that a little bit, because every one of us has an issue asking for money. And I think you're the master at looking at it, talking about it, and thinking about it.